How's everybody today? Actually, this is about how to pay more taxes. So if you need to, if you're in the wrong place, just head out. No, nobody likes to pay taxes. In the end, if you make a lot of money, you do. But we want to have you to pay as little as possible. So we're going to talk today about cost segregations. Click. So we have my beautiful assistant here who is going to manage the PowerPoint because I don't seem to have the clicker. All right, so I am a real estate investor. I do what you guys do. Mostly buy I like to buy value properties and they're buy and holds. I've got investments, commercial. Get right there. I've got investments that includes commercial property, single families, two families, four families. I got a 44 units, my largest one. I've done Kentucky tax liens before. You can go to the next one. And I've managed 500 plus units. I'm a licensed realtor. So we used to manage for other people. There's no money in that, so I don't do it. But I got to always find good managers, so we have a complete set. I've wholesaled and flipped lots. Even done that. And probably the biggest thing we did right before the crash of 07, 08, we were building million-dollar spec homes where we tore down $300,000 houses and built new ones. And it was great. We sold every one before we finished. And by God's good grace, I got out of it just before the market just tanked. Otherwise, I'd be talking about how to get through bankruptcy. And I didn't. So rehabbed 150 plus apartment units and houses. Again, we don't really flip them, so they're all rehabs that we've done. Right now, we're taking our 44 unit. We're converting all those. We're putting about $500,000 into all the units combined. And that'll increase with the increased rents. That will increase our value by about 1.2. So that's another seminar I'd like to talk about is how to get value out of your properties. Because we're going to put about 450 in it, maybe $500,000, and we'll get 1.2 million in equity when we're done. So goodbye. I've been involved in private placements, so I'm not an attorney, but we hire the right attorneys to do those. And I'm chief financial officer and chief operating officer. I've been over the years numerous companies and. There are some real estate investors, I'm their CFO, and we work with them all year to run their business so it's run well and save taxes and everything. And my wife, she's wonderful. She puts up the crazy stuff, calls at 2 a.m., calls at 10 p.m. She just knows that I'll always answer the phone, most times, not every time, but I will. So she puts up with that. Again, the disclaimer always with these, right? This is for educational purposes. You're not paying me to be up here, so you can follow the advice, but seek the right tax professional to advise you and confirm that everything here is said is correct. All right? So let's talk about actual what normally happens. So normally, let's just take a four-family we buy. So let's say we buy a four-family. It's residential, so it's going to be normally depreciated over 27 and a half years. Commercial would be 39 years. So, by the way, if you have an Airbnb, a short-term rental, that's not 27 and a half year residential. That's 39 year commercial property. Okay? So just so you know that. So that's a long time. It's a long time to write off your investment. Again, it generally is incorrect. Some accountants will just put that on, but there are you got to at least reduce it by land value. So let's say my four family is 200 grand and the land value is 30,000. That's really a $170,000 depreciable property. So there is a piece of how depreciation works. So we're going to touch on it a little bit. So that in of itself, I'm going to write it 170, right? 200 less the land is 170. The land's 30. I'm going to write that off over 27 and a half years. It's going to take me a long time to write that off. So what a lot of accountants do, not knowing any better, they'll usually do two things. They'll either go to the county auditor site or states call it a PVA. Other ones, ours is just the auditor site and it's the value, the tax value. They'll pull that and the tax value says the land is X amount of dollars and that's what they'll use. Well, it's just garbage. Most of the auditors have an 80-20 split. And that's what a lot of CPAs have done in the past. Has done an 80-20 split. So they say, hey, the property's 200,000, 20%, 40 grand, that's the land. But you really have to go, is the part of it, really, what would that lot cost you in that neighborhood, that area that you're in, right? It's what is that going to cost you? That's really the land value. So if I've got a smaller property, an $80,000 property, there's no way that lot's worth $16,000. So you want to get that out because land is not depreciable. You don't get to depreciate land. Now, all of it comes back in the end. You'll get that value in the land when you sell it off of the sales price. So the IRS sort of likes that. It's easy to do. They generally have it. But again, it's incorrect because there's lots of other depreciable pieces of the property. We're going to take this four family, we're going to explode it, componentize it, all of its pieces. Move the next one. So take the building, you think, right? You've got it. You've got this building, 27 and a half years. You've got the land. We took that out, right? We talked about that. It's not depreciable. But you've also got things like land improvements. Those are things that are outside of the building, okay, that God didn't put there. You put a yard in with sod. There's a yard. God didn't put that yard there. You did. God didn't put the landscaping there. We didn't put the retaining wall, the sidewalk, the concrete, the fences, all that kind of stuff, the sprinkler system. All that stuff is land improvements. Those are depreciated for tax purposes over 15 years. Okay? So again, we've reduced from 27 and a half years down to 15 for those items. All right? You've also got equipment, furniture, and fixtures. Those are things, if you've got an Airbnb or a short-term rental, those are all the things you're putting into the property. It's the kitchen gadgets you're putting in, it's the furniture, it's the TVs, all that kind of stuff. Those are all five-year items. So again, the land improvements, things like landscaping, there's fences, and these are just sort of the big items. The sidewalks, you got the driveways, right? And even if you put gravel in, maybe you got one that's got a long drive with gravel. That gravel didn't arrive there. He could have dropped it in, but he didn't. You put it in there. Somebody put it in there. And you've got patios and decks. Patios and decks are a prime example of things that you're doing to a house. You can write that off much quicker. That's 15-year property, okay? And we're going to have plenty of time at the end for questions. So five-year property is things like appliances, okay? You got cabinets and countertops. Now, there's one court case in one jurisdiction. I got to remember which one it is. The IRS argued and the court agreed that kitchen cabinets were not. We're a little bit more on the aggressive side. We'll go ahead and take the kitchen cabinets as a short-term five-year property. But there was one case, but it's only in one district. Doesn't apply everywhere. But that can happen. Removal of flooring. So if you think about removal of flooring, it is things like the carpeting, the LVT, LVP. Think about carpeting. Can you take the carpeting out without damaging the floor? Can you take the flooring out without damaging it or damaging the property? Ceramic tile. It's not going to happen. It's not coming out. Okay, you're going to damage the tile or the house. All right, hardwood floor, real, real hardwood floor. Kind you sand and refinish. That's not removable flooring. Okay, so that doesn't count. And those things play into whether or not when we get to it, whether or not it's a good idea, how much benefit you're going to get from a cost segregation. So the other thing is like chandeliers, fluorescent fixtures, ceiling fans, right? A basic light bulb and a socket, that's just part of a house. But if you've got fixtures, those fixtures are all deductible. Blinds are deductible. And you've got there's lots more of the five-year. Go ahead. All right, so a cost segregation. Question is, what are typical results of a cost segregation? Because everybody's like, okay, let's say I do a cost segregation. What's it going to do for me? So generally, we tell you to estimate 15 to 25% of depreciable value. So let's say we have that four family we talked about. Let's say the four family cost us $230,000. And $30,000 of it was land. So let's say it's $200,000 in depreciable value. We should get anywhere between 15%, right? Which I'm going to count, but it's $30,000, right? Maybe even as high as $50,000 on that. It's going to depend, and we're going to talk about that, But that's the benefits you're going to get. So you get, when you do this, these items, the 5 year and 15, in current tax law, you can also do what's called bonus depreciation, which we'll talk about. That gets you a lot of big first time deductions. So in 22 and earlier, right, now it's 23, 100%. So if I went through and that $200,000 house, four family, actually got me depreciable assets in the 5 year and 15 year area of $50,000, I could write off that $50,000 first year. That's a lot of money. Now there will be questions, we're going to talk through whether you get the deduction. 23 is 80%, 24 is 60, then it's 40, then it's 20, and then it disappears. But even prior to the tax law that made it 100%, we had 50% bonus depreciation. Okay? So that's the type of thing. They've always had bonus depreciation, and the reality is they put these rules in place so that they'll elicit a behavior out of you. Almost all tax law, I mean, it is designed to generate revenue, but the tax law giveaways, the deductions they give you, are to elicit your behavior. You're allowed mortgage interest on your home because they want you to buy a home and increase the economy. So in 17, 18, they wanted to increase investments. So they did this. We're real estate investors, but maybe some of us have businesses. This is big because now you could buy equipment and write it off as bonus depreciation. There are other methods of depreciating too, but we're talking right now about bonus depreciation. So this is a big deal. It's a lot of money, and you don't want to miss it. So the remainder of the things that aren't 5 and 15 year are going to be written off over that 27 and a half year. So good. So what affects the percentage, right? So we talked about the flooring, right? If it's hardwood, it's real hardwood floors, it's not going to help you. Now, it does help you if you ever tear them out. So think about this. Let's say, because we're going to do a cost seg, and let's say the building we said is worth $200. And we go through there and we say your boiler is worth, let's call it, $13,750, right? So, or let's just say it's $27,000 boiler. Let's see. $27,000 boiler, right? Written off over 27 and a half years, right? So if I've segregated that out, I've broken out that building, and part of it is the fast depreciable items, right? We just talked about that. That's the benefit of getting that. I can write it off much quicker than 27 and a half years. But even let's say that I put a boiler in, I'm going to write it off over 27 years, right? Well, it's $27,000. It's going to give me $1,000 a year. So the problem is, when I buy a building, it's usually already a used furnace, right? Or a used boiler or whatever it is. So when I'm going to have to write it off when I buy it over 27 years. What's the likelihood that it's going to last 27 years, right? So let's say that I buy it and let's actually take a roof because that's a little bit more easy to determine. Plus, a lot of things, if you actually buy a house with a furnace 30 years ago, it's priced to run. It does real good. The stuff they build now does not. So let's say I have a roof. The roof costs, we say the roof is worth $5,400. So over 27 years, I'm going to write it off $200 every year. But the reality is we know it's only got 5 years of life left. So after 5 years, I've only written off how much? $1,000, right? $200 a year, right? And it's $5,400. So what happens to the other $4,400? Because when I put the new roof on, I've got to capitalize that and depreciate it over 27 and a half years. But the old roof, what am I going to do with it? I'm going to actually tear it off and throw it away. So the IRS says, hey, you've disposed of that property. You've rid yourself of that property. You only wrote off $1,000 of it. So the other $4,400 you can write off right then. So that's why even with a cost segregation, we're not only breaking out 5 and 15 year property, we're actually going to be breaking out all the other things. How much are the windows worth? How much are the gutters worth? How much is the siding worth? All those things, you don't necessarily appraise right away. Water heaters. 27 and a half year property. I don't know who has a water heater the last 27 years, right? So I want to know what that is so I can write that off at that time. So that is a big issue. The number of units, right? Those can be a factor. If I've got four units, I have four sets of appliances. I have four sets of cabinets. I have four sets of carpet. I mean, I've got all this. Plus, maybe I have a four family that's got garages underneath. So there's a lot of pavement in that, a lot of parking spaces. There's probably a retaining wall maybe to get back there if it was built into a hill. So there's a lot of things that, those are the kinds of things that help you. Is there removable flooring? Again, those, the carpet and hardwood, because I've had people fill out the sheet we give out for this cost seg, to do a cost seg on this, and it's almost all hardwood, ceramic tile. I think they call it a brownstone or whatever. They're right on the street. There's no patio. There's no deck. There's no fence. There's no concrete. There's no landscaping. There's nothing outside. And it's all hardwood floors. Well, we're starting to limit, right, what we can write off quickly. It's still a good idea to do the cost segregation, but we want to make sure we don't get the idea that we're going to be writing off a lot of that first year stuff. So land improvements, again, no land improvements. You just have to have those shorter life assets. Good. So the questions you got to consider is, what's the cost of the study, right? So we're going to go over a few of those, but the cost of the study versus the earnings. Here's the deal. Let's say you get a write-off. We talked before. We said $50,000. Now, I don't get $50,000 from the government. It's not a tax credit. It's a deduction. So let's say I'm in the 40% tax bracket. Well, that $50,000 is going to net me how much? $20,000 in cash from the government. The government's going to give me a deduction. I'm going to put that $20,000 in my pocket. And then I'm going to go out and I'm going to buy a dump. I don't know what I'm going to buy. But $20,000, I can use that $20,000 to invest in something else. Maybe I've got two four families. So now the money's in my pocket's $40,000. Well, I could buy a $40,000 building. I mean, I've got people that, for people in this area, that can go to some areas. I had one guy that actually purchased a $16,000 single family. He did some work. There's already a tenant in it. It was bringing in $900 a month. Well, that tax savings, that cost segregation, just gave him an asset that was going to give him $9,000 cash flow every year. That's worth a lot of money. So don't just think of the deduction. Think of what you can do with that money later on. So the time value is in there. Your income level, if you're not a real estate professional, can affect it. Does everybody understand real estate professional status? Do they or don't they? Just say, you can say no. So if you don't, raise your hand. But anyway, so if you're a real estate professional, I can write all those things off right away. There's no limits. I can have negative income. It can be great. If I'm not a real estate professional, I've got limits to what I can deduct. If my income's over $150,000, I'm not deducting any of those losses currently today. But you do the cost segregation, even if you're at that higher income level and you're not a real estate professional, you're still going to be able to take those losses. And they're going to be passive losses, but they're going to be used to offset all your future income. So you may not get may not be able to write off your W-2 income, but you're going to be able to write off all the future earnings. And that's what some people really need to understand. Higher tax rate for recapture on accelerated depreciation. So there's one drawback. If you accelerate, so 27 and a half years is at a straight line. Just even every year. When I do bonus depreciation or I do five-year property, that's accelerated depreciation. So the government says when you sell your property, you have to recapture any depreciation you've taken. Because the IRS says you get to depreciate the property. How many people have a property that actually went down in value? You rarely have that. You had the weird 2007-08 when everybody started to take a hit, but you just don't have that. So when we go to sell it, we took the great depreciation deduction, but now guess what? The government says, hey, Scott, you really didn't depreciate, so all those deductions, we want them back. So I've got to pay tax on all that benefit I got. So it's just a temporary loan from the IRS, but I eventually have to pay it back. So the question is, it's at ordinary income tax rates. So if I do it now, and I'm in the 40% tax bracket, okay, and I say 47, it's 37, but there's a bunch of crap taxes on it that basically increase to 40. So let's say it's 40, and I write off that $50,000, I got 40 grand, or 20 grand in tax savings. When I go to sell it later, and I'm in the 22% tax bracket, I'm only paying 22%. So I am playing a little arbitrage. Now, if it happens that I'm in 22 now and later on I'm in the 40% bracket, you know, that recapture can be expensive. But we have ways, which isn't for this time, to defer or eliminate those gains in the future. So that will be a good thing. So there are issues where you're going to have, again, the higher tax rate for the recapture. So you got to consider that. And that's why you really need to plan. It's still not that you don't do the cost segregation. You just need to plan and understand what it means 10 years from now when you sell the property. Okay? Because we don't want you to be surprised. Still a good deal. I still think you need to do it. But that's it. So good. Next slide. So when's it best to do it? Okay? You can't do it on a flip. Some people say, well, if I have a flip, can I do a cost seg? You can, but it's worthless. You're wasting your money. You don't do it on a flip because, again, you're just buying it, you're rehabbing it, then you're selling it. So you sold it for 100, you have 80 in it, you got a $20,000 profit. Cost seg means nothing. So we don't do that. So it's buy and hold. And even the shorter holds are fine too. Now, if I'm going to buy it today and I'm in the 40% bracket, I'll save my 20 grand in taxes. I'm going to sell it in 3 years, and I'm not going to do a 1031 exchange. A 1031 exchange is where I can sell it, buy something else, and defer my taxes. And maybe I really actually win, because if I die, I win. I know you really don't, but your heirs do. Your heirs win. My wife, if I die, she will be sad, but I've told her, when I die, you have to look sad at the funeral. Don't count the money, and you got to pick a better husband. A second husband has to be better than me, better than me. But literally, she'll be able to sell my property, and because I got to step up in basis, again, not for discussion here, she'll never pay tax on it ever. Okay? So there's a lot of benefits. Even if you hold it for a short time, if you 1031, so I hold the four family, and then 3 years from now, I'm going to sell it. Prices are still good. I find another one I want to buy, so I 1031. I got to do all the processes. I can keep moving up, like moving from a four family to an eight family to a 12, 44, 100 unit. I can keep moving up, or I can get, my wife once said, why don't we sell the apartments and just buy 40 single family houses? I said, because I don't want 40 furnaces to have to fix. I'm not doing that. But she liked that kind of asset better. She likes commercial better. We bought our commercial building. She'd love to sell the apartment buildings and buy another commercial building. And the prices will keep dropping on those, so it'll be good. So short-term rentals are awesome, especially if you're not a real estate investor or if you're not a real estate professional. So with a short-term rental, when I say short-term, that's average of 7 days or less, okay? I materially participate. There's about seven options where you materially participate. But if I materially participate, most people, the material participation on a short-term rental is I work more than 100 hours and I work more than any other individual on my short-term rental. Then I can use that money, those deductions, that cost segregation. Let's say I buy let's say I'm down in the Smoky Mountains, right? Pigeon Forge, okay? And I buy a $400,000 house that I'm going to have a vacation rental in. And I materially participate. I'm not a real estate professional, I got a full-time job. But when I do that, I then get, let's say it's 25, let's say it's, so it's, let's say it was $500,000, so $400,000 depreciable value, let's say, if I was really crazy. And so 400,000, 25%, I get 100 grand off of my taxes. But if I'm not a real estate professional, how do I do it? Well, if it's a short-term rental, I can write that off against my W-2 income. We had a guy that worked at P&G, made 250 grand, had a short-term rental. He took our advice, did the cost seg, kept a log of his hours. He materially participated, and he got that deduction that it was $125,000. He got to write that off as W-2 income. So, awesome. His accountant at that point actually said he couldn't. I had to explain to the accountant why he could, but then that's what we do, because we don't do prep anymore, but we'll help people when they do a strategy like that, talk with their accountant to get them to understand, totally legitimate, they can do it. So that is a great thing, short-term rentals. I always caution people too, they think, oh, we'll get that big loss. You can do the big loss the first year on the short-term rental, but then I don't have anybody, any of my clients that have short-term rentals that aren't making a killing. So if you think you're not gonna pay any, the first year, gonna really be a big savings. After that, you're just making money. So when they just dump cash on your desk, you gotta pay some tax, that's what it'll be. So even a shorter hold, and you do no 31, if it's not no 1031, if it's big enough. So let's say I do save my 20 grand, and let's say I sell it in 5 years. What do I have to do? Pay the 20,000 back, right? I'm in the same bracket, but I still got to use the 20,000 for 5 years. So it's still, in my opinion, a good deal. I would still do it. You sort of got to weigh that, right? The cost of the cost seg versus the temporary 5-year hold, you know, tax-free loan, interest-free loan on that 20 grand. So that's what I'm going to try to determine if that is one. Choose your tax year when you're in a higher bracket to the cost segs. And we're going to talk about some ways to do it that you can actually go back to your older assets. Normally, you'll do it now. So if I buy the property this year, I place into service this year, I'm going to do the cost seg this year, and I'll get my deductions this year. But if you haven't taken deductions, we'll explain a way you can do that. So, and we can play with when do we take that deduction based on what year. Like somebody says, hey, I'm going to start a new job and I'm going from $100,000 to $300,000 in income. So I really would like to get that year. Well, then we'll talk through that. Good. So that's the past asset. So let's say I've got an asset. I have assets that I bought. I'll give you an example. I have a gentleman who is a client. He's probably got 500 units, but he has these multiple properties, did great with them, but he never took cost segregation all those years. So I said to him, hey, Ryan, let's go ahead and let's do a cost seg on all those older properties. So what that is you basically are going to do the cost seg, and then we're going to catch up what we should have taken. So let's say it was 5 years ago I bought it. I do a cost seg, and I could have written off the whole thing, okay? And I break it out into 5-year and 15-year property. Those are the fast items. Again, the roof helps, but it doesn't do any good for me for a bigger deduction. So let's say I do that. What'll happen is we do the cost seg, and we say, when you bought it, or after you rehabbed it, this is what depreciation you should have taken, and you didn't. So we say to the IRS, hey, IRS, we made a mistake. We're changing our accounting method. So in terms, that's called a 3115 that gets filed. It is sort of a complicated form, and the backup documentation you have to provide. But I can say to the IRS, hey, we meant to write it off. We should have written it off. So we're going to change our accounting method, and that 5-year property, or that 5 or 15 year property, we should have taken 5 years of it, right? So that 5-year property should have been totally written off, and we only wrote off 5/27ths, right? We took off 5 years, 27 years. So the IRS is going to let us take all that depreciation that we should have taken into this year and write it off our tax return. So this guy, when we did his, these were bigger properties, but he literally had deductions that year of almost $800,000. That was good because that year he made about $1.3 million. So he was very happy. He was a real estate professional, but he could do that. He could catch that up. So we do a lot of that at the time. That does make a lot of sense. Sometimes it doesn't. So if you have a one-two family that was, you know, $150,000 from 5 years ago or 8 years ago, some questions about whether it's worth it, but you just analyze it and figure out if that is worth it. Let's say you did it in 22, you filed your tax return in 22, and you said, oh, I should have done this cost seg, I should have gotten deductions. If you go, you can go back 1 year by just amending it, because a 3115 is about $2,000 to $3,000 to prepare. But you can just, if it's just the previous year, you can go back and amend. If you've done it for 2 years, you've established your accounting method. And that's why you have to do that change of accounting method. Now, some people will say, well, does that mean I'm going to get audited? So when you do a 3115, a whole package goes to Ogden, Utah, to a special division that handles change of accounting method. They're going to look at that documentation, okay? So some people they get freaked out. I don't want them looking at my stuff. You know, electronically, you know, nobody's eyes really go on it all the time. For certain reasons it would. So they just don't want anybody doing that. So with an amendment or a 3115, somebody will put their eyeballs on it. Doesn't mean it. I mean, we've done these 3115s, and there hasn't been an audit. We actually don't prepare the 3115s. They're very involved, and so we actually have our engineering firm, we do it. They do that 3115. It's great documentation. That practice in the IRS, those people, they're not your plain vanilla auditors who don't know what the hell they're doing. These people know what they're doing. They understand the tax law. They understand you're allowed to do it. They're going to look to make sure everything is correct, and they're going to go on. And it's going to be correct because you hire somebody. You could do the 3115 yourself. I would not. You're going to pay that money to do it. And that will allow you to do that. So again, you've got to do it. If you've already done it for 2 years, you got to do that. Otherwise, you can go back and amend. We had that where we did a cost seg for folks. There was their 22 tax return had not been filed. So we did their cost seg. They went back and amended 21 so they could get it all, get their deductions. And then 22 was done after that amendment was filed. So they were good. You go ahead and move it. All right. So what do they cost, right? So it will depend on the professional. So typically a small unit, so I'll give you two examples. We had a small seven-unit building that was $928K in depreciable value. The engineers could do that for about $3,700. We bought a commercial building. That was our building. We bought a building we were in. We were renting it, and we wanted to buy it. So we bought it in the middle of COVID, which was a good buy. So we bought it for $1 million, and it cost $8,500, $8,000 plus expenses, so about $8,500 to do the cost seg. But for that building, we got $200,000 in additional first-year depreciation. And I'm not a real estate professional because I do stuff like this. My wife is, so I was happy, right? So we got to deduct that off the return. Residential, if it's seven units or less, or it's less than seven units and less than $600,000 in depreciable value, we can do what's called a desk cost segregation, which we use software licensed by our engineer. So we pay them to do that, but they stand behind the calculations that it'll produce, and we can do that for a much less cost, $1,500. So let me give you an example. I have got two guys in Kentucky. They bought nine two families, paid about $140 apiece. The depreciable value was about $120. They paid $11,000. We actually did 9 of them for $1,200 each. We get some economies of scale. So they paid $11,000. Their tax savings was $60,000. Well worth it. Plus, now when they replace the roof on the building three years from now, they got additional write-off they can get right away. So that's the important thing. So you can, I mean, it is not that expensive. So now I've got most people that buy property, and mentally they know. So it's 6 units or less, it's less than $600K in depreciable value. They just know the cost of my property that I'm going to buy for $150,000 is really $151,500 because they know they're going to spend $1,500 doing the cost check. It's just a given. They're going to fill the form out. They're going to get it done. It's just part of the deal because they've got the ability then to deduct those. And even if they're not real estate professionals, you know, you think about it. If you're not a real estate professional, you have those deductions. So let's say it produces a loss on my rentals of $20,000. And I didn't get to take it off my W-2 income, but it's not that you can't ever use it. Now the next year, when I make $5,000 in profit, I use 5 of that 20 carried forward, so I don't pay any tax on that. And the next year, I make $10,000. So I use the rest, now I've got 15 carrying forward, I use 5, and then I got 15 left. I use 10 of that 15, I don't pay any tax. And the next year, I make $10,000 again. Of that $10,000, I write $5,000. That's my remaining loss carryover. I only pay tax on $5,000. For 3 years, I made all this money. I didn't pay any taxes. So don't be scared of not doing it because I'm not a real estate professional or I don't have a short-term rental that you can do that. So I think it's really, it's a great to do that. Go to the next, I think the next slide is probably, yeah. So I want to take questions that you've got regarding all this. So, yes, ma'am.
Okay, so I just want to be clear with you. You said that, you know, when you do have capital expenditures, like you place the roof or the fence or something like that, where you can, I'm a little bit confused about the fact that you can take the depreciation.
Well, in the future, you're not going to redo the cost segregation.
Yeah.
But what the other thing you learn from this is when I'm doing a rehab of a unit, and I've already done a cost seg, like my 44 unit, where we're renovating all 44 units, putting $10,000 in every single unit, I know to keep track of the cabinets, the countertops, the flooring. Instead of, a lot of times when we're doing a lot of tax prep, a taxpayer would say, I had $24,000 of improvements. Well, that's great. I'll take it off over 27 and a half years. But if instead you actually told me that the $40,000 in improvements, you know, cabinets and kitchen countertops and all that kind of stuff were X amount, the appliances were X amount, the LVP was this, the carpet was this, we put new landscaping in, and so you separate those out. Right. And you're doing that in the future. Again, you're not doing a cost segregation study. You're just going to keep track of what you're spending. So it is what the cost segregation study does too. So we used to, I don't know whether we advocated it, but we said you could do it. Somebody suggested, well, I'll just do my own cost seg. Well, IRS is not real excited about it. You got to make sure it's real. It's got a method. But here's the deal. When we do a cost segregation, you got to realize that the wiring from the appliance, where the appliance plugs in, the wiring all the way back to the panel and the breaker for the refrigerator, that's all part of the refrigerator. Thing is, you and I, to try to figure out what the cost of that is, that's not us. Engineers can do it. I mean, literally, when they did our commercial building, so again, we can do the smaller ones because they can be done at a desk level. But there's less risk. The company stands behind the software algorithms that calculate this. But the big stuff, I mean, that they're looking, the engineers are looking at potential drawings, if there's drawings. They're looking at all that, and they're actually figuring out what all those pieces are, you know, to figure it out. Plumbing, The plumbing that goes up, that's the plumbing for the kitchen. If you got a water line running to your refrigerator that is for water, that's part of the refrigerator's cost. Again, we're not, if I sat before an IRS agent and I told them I figured out what it was for that piece of wire, that they're going to think I'm a moron, and they're going to win. So we want to have the professionals do it. But yeah, that's the thing is, what we tell, and we actually have done we picked out the big items, and we've sort of said, hey, when you put fences in, like if somebody does a rehab on a property they're going to hold, we've got a form that we have that we just say, hey, these are the big items, countertops and cabinets, LVP, LVT, carpet, fence, landscaping. So allocate your rehab in these areas, the quick asset items, 5 and 15 year, and then everything else can lump together. But again, we still want to even keep track of, I put new windows in. Well, what'd they cost? What did the furnace cost that I put in? The water heater that I just put in. Now there's all, by the way, too, I want to step back. Like water heaters, there's some rules that basically let you write off water heaters pretty quick. There's some other depreciation rules that will let you do that. We're not going to go into that here. So there are some other ways. You don't have to put those as assets. The other thing that I'll also tell you is things everybody likes to write stuff off, right? But if I'm going to sell my property, and like if I have my 44 unit, and it's 44 units, so, but if my repairs on those 44 units, 20,000 of all my repairs are really improvements, capital items, I don't want that showing up on my P&L. I want it to show up as depreciation. But if I showed us the repairs and you come along to buy it, you're going to say, well, your repairs are this amount, right? Well, no, really, 20,000 of it was improvements. So, but because it's in repairs, it decreased my income by 20,000. So let's say just a simple 10 cap rate. They buy properties much, much lower cap rates. So if it's 10 cap rate, $20,000 is $200,000. So I have just, by putting that as a repair, I've just dropped the value by $200,000 of my property. Because I will tell you that theoretically, four families and single family, anything under four units and less, they do comps, and I think comps are crap. I don't care about comps. I don't want the bank looking. I mean, and people pay stupid prices, they look comps, but the reality is it's your income. All these are income producing properties. We're only going to pay, if I want to make 10%, I'm only going to pay $100,000 for your property if I'm going to, before interest, because that's financing, but operating income, and before depreciation and interest, I'm only going to pay you $100,000 for it. If 10 years from now, it's still only making $10,000 of income because you've just, the rents haven't raised or the expenses have increased, I'm still making $10,000. Guess what? After 10 years, my property is still only worth $100,000. So to get this idea that I get this value creation because, oh, everything depreciates 6%. No, it doesn't. Not income producing properties. It does not produce it. Now, you will have it on single families. And to a degree, I guess you have it on four families. But single families, you do, because you can sell a single family to a home buyer. If I'm a home buyer, I'm willing to pay more. My wife and I are going to buy something at auction this month that we'll pay a little bit more than it's worth because we want it. So we're willing to pay that. The appreciation works. With income-producing properties, it's all about the cash. So by not having those in there, I can put them on the depreciation schedule, and I can still write them off, right? Like if I use bonus depreciation in 22, I could put the item that I was expensing on the income statement, or I could put it on the depreciation schedule and write it off as depreciation. Okay? Depreciate. So also banks. So you got the buyer, right? If you're going to buy it from me, you're looking at my expenses. But a bank is willing to say, as a as a buyer would be, a bank will say, most banks will add back in, like they look at your Schedule E or 8825 in a partnership, they're looking at it and they're going to see that it lost $5,000. Well, they don't look at it as losing $5,000. They're going to add back in your interest, they're going to add back in all your depreciation and say, here's your cash flow. So you want expenses in depreciation, not in repairs for loans and selling the property. If you're going to keep it for 20 years, you're never going to refinance it, who really cares? Except that sometimes you got to legitimately have them capitalized. Yes, sir?
This goes back a little bit, but do you treat labor differently from materials?
Nope, they're all the same. So, so the problem is when you're in a rehab, is that you get this contractor who says, I'm going to do the job for $20,000. That's fine. And maybe he's going to do it for $20,000 plus you're going to buy all the material. That's great. And they don't like this. You still got to explain it to them. So if I have a contractor who does that, what I will say to the contractor is, okay, I'm not going to nitpick you because they think you're going to nitpick them, but I need to know how much was it to put the cabinets in? How much was it to lay the floor? So they don't want to do that, right? Because they don't want this line item, and you're going, I ain't paying you this much for putting in that. That's a crazy. Well, you're not going to do that, and don't do it. If you do it, you'll just piss off your contractors. You were acceptable with that price. Take it, but tell them it's for tax purposes. Really benefits me, so I need you to break it out. So that is, it is key, because most people don't do that. They get their Home Depot bill, and it's got the ceiling fans and the cabinets and the carpeting and whatever. And if you hire a Carpetland, in this area, Carpetland, if I hire them, they do the install and the carpet, everything together. But yeah, you want to use those, put that in, that labor. Yep.
Scott, bonus depreciation, you said it's only applicable to assets with a 5-year life and a 15-year life?
Correct. And it was 100% through 22. 23, it's 80% and it drops. So, good. Yep. Yep.
The cost for the segregation, that $1,500, like you got a four unit,
yep.
$15 a piece?
No, it's one.
Is it one time or is it
no?
Paying?
No, just one time. That's it. Just one time, you're paying $1,500, that's what you're doing. You only have to do it once. There's no reason to do it another time. But when you do rehab in the future, right, now you're in the mental state of saying, hey, I got to separate my improvements out. Yeah, it's not every year or anything like that. Yes?
So if I bought a property in 2021,
yep.
And then in 2024, I want to do this cost set.
Mm-hmm.
So I go back to that property that I bought in 2021. Am I able to take the 100%
They'll calculate it based on when it should have occurred.
So I would actually grab the
I think you would, yeah. I need to double check, I haven't really
Scott, yes.
Yeah, I think that's the case. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's 100%. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. But I just wanted to jumped back on, wait a second, maybe I need to rethink that. Yeah, you would. Yeah, and Selena confirmed it, yep.
Are there any rules around the transferability?
I did a close set with Scott.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Are there any rules around the transferability of a cost seg to a new owner, like say you buy a 10-unit that had a previous cost seg?
No, he'll have to do his own because he's paying more for it. Because you bought it for $200 and he bought it for $350, so they're going to do a new one, not a problem. So yeah. Okay. Norma?
So, if you have new builds and you have a general contractor that subcontractors help with the work, so what you're saying is everything has to be itemized, right?
Well,
but how would you...
So if you're doing a new build,
yeah.
You're doing a cost segregation. If it's a buy and hold new build, right? You're building, because we used to develop apartment buildings. That's one thing I didn't put on there. We were in the development world. Unfortunately, right when it crashed too. So, so what'll happen is when they do the cost seg study for that 6-unit you're building or something, or the hotel or whatever it is, they're going to take your drawings, all that kind of stuff. So they're going to do a deep dive into that. They want to have your drawings. We just had somebody who bought a house. It was a commercial building near here in an area called Pleasant Ridge, Main Drag, and they had bought it. They had put their previous accountant had actually deducted stuff when they shouldn't have. But we did a 3115 just recently, got them an extra $100,000. It's the same guy that we did the $800,000 property. So that's what he did. He had drawings. He had permitted it. I mean, it was a remodel, but it was enough that he had to have permits and drawings. And so they look at all that kind of stuff. And they'll typically come out, too, after it's completed and have pictures. They'll come out. They'll send somebody out. Well, like when I did our commercial building, they actually sent out, you know, our engineering firm, we use this all over the U.S. So they hire somebody to come in, take pictures, walk the building. And that's part of my cost. Because my cost seg was $8,000 plus expenses. Well, to have the guy come out and take pictures was about $500.
So once they do that cost segregation, do you use the accountant that does your taxes? You use that information every year.
Right. Correct. They're gonna say, okay, here's the number. Because normally when they go to your depreciation schedule, they're putting here's the property, 27 and a half years, here's the land, no depreciation, and there's just two items. We'll have it broken down into 25 items. And we typically give a spreadsheet. So most tax preparers who have professional software can then actually import all those assets in. Because again, we did ours, a commercial building. I think there was probably 60 assets that they broke it down into. So now, you don't have to do it that way. You can just say, here's all my 5-year property, here's all my 15-year property. The problem is now you got to keep a separate list of what it is, and then when you get rid of the item, then you got to bring it in, you got to reduce that one item. It's just messy to me. Just put them all in there one time, and then you'll be in good shape. Yep. And then, yeah, you don't have to, they're going to use it from then on out. Okay. Another question?
It's being built now. Take lots of photographs before they took the drywall.
I've got lots of photographs.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yes. Okay, you have to repeat it. They're loud over there.
If I do this cost segregation,
yep,
and I don't need all of the depreciation I'm going to get from it, can I apply that towards capital gains from a flip that I'm going to sell?
No, it doesn't. Well, yes and no. Are you a real estate professional?
I think I qualify. That's all I do now.
Okay. Yeah, the real estate professional is 750 hours minimum,
okay,
and it's more than 50% of your working hours.
That's
why somebody who's a full-time W-2 employee, 2,080 hours, they got to work 2,081 hours in real estate, and I'm not going to sit before an IRS agent and say, well, Jim, he's a real estate professional. He really works a full-time job. The only time I've ever seen it work, I've got pilots before they had a shortage. There were pilots that were seniority enough that they literally just flew when there was a sickness, so they only flew, you know, 10 hours a month. They still got their full salary. And then I've got firefighters. They work 24 on, 48 off. I've had a couple of those. But for the most part, if you have a full-time job, you're not going to do it. But so in your case, then you're going to get all that. You could take that depreciation then against that capital gain. So you will get the ability to do it. And the other thing is I want to be clear. Let's say you did, we had one where there were two brothers. They bought a bunch of vacation rental, short-term rental stuff. And what we did, and we've got another one in town who they do short-term rentals. We sat, after we calculated everything, we then determined whether we were going to use bonus depreciation or not. Because we don't want their income. Some people want no income. They want to pay no tax. Well, the lowest tax bracket is taxable income for a couple, $90,000, they're only going to pay 12%. Now, some people may argue, I don't even want, I don't want to pay $13,500 to IRS. For me, so it's a personal decision. But for me, I'll pay 12% all day long. So I do not want my deductions lowering my income below $90,000 in taxable income. I just don't want to do it. I'll take it at 22%, 24, 32, 35, all up. But I don't want, I'll pay tax, I'll write the check. That's fine. But some people don't have that. They have a mentality they don't want to pay, they want to pay zero. And that's fine. But you can now say, I'm going to do my cost segs. You can only say, you can exclude, you can elect out of bonus depreciation on asset classes. So if you're going to elect out of bonus depreciation, it's got to be on all five-year property. It can't just be on, I'm going to take it on this property and not on this one. Okay. Now you can do it by entity. If it's got a 1065, that can be different. So what we do is almost always we take the bonus depreciation on 15-year, because 15-year is still a long time. You know, I'm 58 now. I think I'm 58. I'm 58, and 15 years, I mean, I should hopefully still alive. But I don't really, I just don't want to depreciate that long. But five-year property, when you do five-year property, not bonus, the first year is 20% of the amount. The second year is 40% of the amount. I mean, you're getting a ton of your deductions within the first few years anyway. So a lot of times we won't do it on that. So in this case, the brothers, we looked at both their tax returns, and we said it didn't work. I mean, it doesn't make sense that he did it. So we didn't do it, so it was nice, because in the future, they just had those deductions. We had the same thing where we had somebody does short-term rentals, and they had some partnerships. So we actually got on the phone, a Zoom call, with each partner, because the people who put it together, they did want bonus, but we wanted to make sure they were okay with it, still did cost seg, and we just worked through that. That's why you do the cost seg, and then that tells you what asset classes they're in. But then you're going to actually work with your CPA or your enrolled agent to determine, do I elect out or do I not? Depends on your personal preferences. That's it.
And that's annually, right?
Annually, yeah, it's just annual. So yeah, so 1 year they opted out of bonus depreciation. The next year they had a lot of income. So that year we elected to take a lot of their all their bonus. Yep. Yes.
What's bonus depreciation?
So bonus depreciation is law that was put in place. It was actually before 1718 when we had the Trump administration. So it was bonus depreciation was around before that. It was 50%. But with the tax laws the Republicans passed at the end of 17, that gave bonus depreciation was now 100%, and it included all five-year and 15-year property. So you had to look. And every year it'll be different. So again, the end of 26, or beginning of 26, the law all switches back. So we'll be back in a different world if they don't fix something and change it to make it last. So, yes, sir.
Can you talk about depreciation recapture and how that works with bonus?
Yeah, so with depreciation recapture, we're allowed. So let's say that I own a building for 30 years. So depreciated over 27 and a half, right? So I've fully depreciated it. So that means, except for the land, remember land's not depreciable? So the land part is still there. So $100,000 house, say $20,000 in land. So after 30 years, I've written off $80,000. So my basis, if I sold, is only $20,000. So the IRS says, hey, you took $80,000 of depreciation, but the house is worth more than you originally paid for it. So all the depreciation gets recaptured. You have to claim it as income the year you sell it. Okay? And depreciation recapture is based on what was allowed, what you took, or allowable. Means that if you didn't take it, too bad, you still got to pick it up as income. I just felt so bad. I had a couple, this was a decade ago, they came in with three houses they've owned for 30 years. They're retired, they sold them, and I'm like, so what depreciation Have you taken, do you have the schedules and all that? They go, no, we didn't take depreciation because we knew we were going to have to recapture it. I'm like, well, I hate to tell you, you lost out on 27 and a half years of deductions. You're going to have to pay tax on it again. You're not going to, you don't get to, there's, you can't exclude it. So you got to pay that to recapture. When you recapture, straight line property is a maximum of 25% per year or 25% rate. Okay, so if you sell it and it was 27 and a half year property, the max rate, even from the 40% tax bracket, you're going to pay 25% on that recapture. Stuff that was accelerated, you pay ordinary income tax rates. Okay, so if I'm in the 40% bracket, I'm going to pay tax on the accelerated stuff at 40%. Does that make sense? Did that cover all the questions? Bonus is accelerated appreciation, yeah. So it'll be recaptured at ordinary income tax rates. Okay. So you do it. That's why if you bonus it, I've had people who they're 1031-ing every couple years. They buy a property, get a huge deduction, they sell it, 1031 into another property, and that just keeps being deferred. So right, you would have to recapture it. That's why. Yeah, so that's why you sort of got it. It's still not a bad deal, but you did the cost seg, and if you really are going to sell it in 2 years, and you're not going to do 1031, I don't know that the cost seg's worth it.
My follow-up question to this would be, one of the ways around depreciation recapture, to my understanding, is if you dispose of something. So suppose you've done renovations on a house. If you've done the floors, you can dispose of the previous floors.
So right, that's sort of what we talked about, right? We did the roof. Maybe you might not have been here then, but so we have a roof. We do a cost seg. The roof is worth $5,400. Mm-hmm. We write it off over those years, but at some point we rip off that roof. Mm-hmm. Whatever depreciation we haven't taken, we get to deduct that immediately.
Does that depreciation get recaptured?
No, because that's already... It's gone. That's why it's important. We tell people, we have another session we do, not here, but is keeping your asset schedule accurate. You don't want to have, like, you've replaced appliances over the last 15 years, and you got six refrigerators on the single family house depreciation schedules. Get that off of there. You got rid of them. I mean, it doesn't do anything. We just put on your tax return that you disposed of them. It was $900 refrigerator. Depreciated $900, you disposed of it, there's no tax impact. So we want to get it off because I don't want the sale price being allocated percentage-wise to that refrigerator that no longer exists. So you really need to keep those up. Most people don't. That's what you need to do as real estate investors is keep that depreciation schedule. And make sure your CPA or your enrolled agent actually gives you depreciation schedules. When we do a return, and I've got clients in here, they can attest, they get a depreciation schedule in their client copy packet. There's a lot of CPAs who don't do it. You tell them, do it. One, if you ever switched CPAs, that CPA needs the previous depreciation. So it becomes a sort of an awkward, maybe it's an awkward call. I'm leaving you, but I need the depreciation schedules.
Or if they die.
That's, you made a good point. If your CPA dies, we just had one here who passed away. So it can be, yeah, you want to make sure you have those. So, yes.
If you have a property and you take depreciation for 10 years or a certain amount of time, and then you 1031 it into a larger property, how does that depreciation that you take in apply to the new property?
So there's two things. One is when you buy the new property, you've got a basis in your old property, right? Less your depreciation. That basis you keep depreciating. So you have a property, a new property. Well, part of that property's value is the basis of the old property. That has to be depreciated over the same schedule it was already on. Okay? But then the new property depreciation basis. So the new property depreciation with the 1031, if I've deferred gain, like let's say my gain I calculated was 100 grand. Well, that deferred gain, and then the new property I bought was 500, and it met all the requirements to be all tax-free, tax-deferred, then I'm going to take that $500,000 property, I'm going to take off the 100, so I'm only going to appreciate 400. Of that 400, the basis of my old property, that amount, gets written off over the old method and life, and then the rest of it gets appreciated over 27 and a half years for the new stuff. So, in theory, and we do have this, we had a guy who had 1031, I mean, the $800,000 property he bought, his basis was 100K. So then the question was, well, I got this 900 grand property, I'm going to do a cost seg. I'm like, I wouldn't. It's only $100,000. There's not much we can, you know, because you're deferring it. But it's a beautiful thing because you keep deferring it and then you die. And then your heirs get to sell it and not pay any tax. So, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Sold it. So in that case, their cost basis was whatever they paid for 30 years prior, because they chose not to
appreciate it. No. So if they bought a $100,000 house, $300,000 houses, okay, and the land was $20,000 each, so their cost basis was only $60,000. Because they should have written off that stuff. Because it's allowed or allowable. It was allowable. You chose not to do it, tough cookies. So yeah, their basis was just their land. Now, at that point, I will say that you do sort of some creative, don't get crazy, but normally I like to make the land low, right? They never put it on their tax return. So their land, I want to say, is a little bit higher, right? So at least they get something. Now, don't be coming to me and saying, well, it's 90% land. No, we're not doing that. That's not going to work. I appreciate the thought. It's good. It's creative, but you got it. No, it's not going to do that. Yeah. So yeah, that is the problem with not doing it. So. It is not. That's why the example of a couple who owned the property for 30 years and didn't depreciate it, their basis was just the land. Right? Because they should have taken their depreciation, right? So their land, because it wasn't depreciable, that would be their cost basis, or their tax basis. Not their cost basis, their tax basis would be. Because they didn't take the depreciation. They were allowed to do it, right? It was allowable. And they owned it for 30 years, and they just didn't do it. Well, that's just too bad. Because they should have taken it. So the IRS says, because you could have taken it, and you chose not to take it, we don't care. You got to pay tax on it now. So it is, yeah. Fortunately, they didn't owe any money on it. If they had over the years, you know, done the old burr, everybody does the burr thing. I get it. But you keep taking money out, and the potentially, you get to a point, like for them, if they'd owned 80% on the property, 80% loan to value and sold it, they only had 20%, probably less commissions, 10%. Their taxes on the whole thing were probably way more than the money they walked away with. So now, not only do I say you got to pay taxes, and that's a bummer, you get your deductions, but they're like, well, I got no money. Well, we got a problem. We'll have to get a payment plan with the IRS. That's what we're going to have to do. So yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Even if it was at the end?
In theory, you could, but it wouldn't make any difference, because you're going to catch up depreciation, which you've already taken 26 years of it. So at that point, it doesn't make any sense. So the longer you get out, it's less of a benefit,
yeah.
Right? So because you're taking something that was depreciated over 27 and a half years and saying, we should have done it over 5. So if I'm past 5, I get to take it all, less what I already took during that period of time. So it just, yeah, it doesn't, at that point. Right, you could, yeah, you could legally do it, but you wouldn't do it, but yeah. Yep. Yes.
Going back to the couple, if they figure that they should have had the depreciation, let's say 5 years, 10 years, can they do depreciation later?
So you can. So we've had some people who didn't depreciate something. So we'll put it on the depreciation schedule, but we will, because they could have taken it, right? So let's say the depreciation for that first 5 years or whatever was supposed to be $10,000. We will do the depreciation schedule, and we will put it as accumulated $10,000. Even though they never did it, we're going to say that they could have, so that's the depreciable, that's the depreciation they could have taken. Now, they could amend back 3 years and correct some of it. So sometimes it makes sense that they would correct it. So you can start depreciating it, but it's just like we have to act like you did. So we're going to make the accumulated what you should have taken. So then your depreciation schedules are right. You're good to go. It's just in your mind, I never got that $10,000 worth of depreciation that I could have taken. And they can only go back. They'd be able to go back 3 years, basically. So sooner they catch it, the better. So, yes.
So one more time with regard to recapture. So if I buy the building for $200,000, I sell it for $500,000, my taxes are $300,000 times 25%.
No. $300,000, that's capital gain.
No. I get that, but I guess I'm talking about. So he would have depreciated based on the $200,000. That's his cost basis, right? What he paid for that. Right.
200, then right, depreciation off of that.
So 200 divided by, let's just say 27 and a half years.
Well, let's say it's 270,000.
Yeah, 270,000.
So how many years do you have it? 10?
Yeah, say 10.
So that's 10,000 a year, right? So that's 70,000 or $100,000.
Times 25%. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay, that's
what. Another recapture is different. No, that's the recapture maximum is 25%. Unless you did bonus depreciation. That's ordinary income tax rates. What are you thinking?
Doesn't it tax at whatever income tax bracket you're in for the recapture?
Not on a standard straight line. The max is 25%. But if you're in the 22% bracket, you're only going to pay 22%. Does that make sense? So if you do a depreciation like 27 after your straight line, they say that even if you're in the 40% tax bracket, your recapture is only a maximum of 25%. But if you accelerate depreciation, then it's whatever your ordinary income tax rate is.
Okay, I got you.
Does that make sense though?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so then the other, so let's say he sold it for $570,000, the $300,000, that's capital gain at 15 or 20%, whichever you're at. Could be zero, but at that point you wouldn't be. Other questions? Yeah.
So, what about in the case of house hacking, when you buy a duplex, you live on one side, the other side is income tax?
Yeah.
And so I wanted to know, can you do cost segregation with that?
You do it on the whole thing.
On the whole thing.
And then half of it's personal, so you're not depreciating it, but you're recording the cost. You got the cost noted. Because at some point, you're probably going to move out of that half, right? And put it in, then once you do that, then that half goes into service, and we know what the cost is at that point. Because if it's personal in nature, when you convert it to a rental, your depreciation is based on your original cost or the fair market value, whichever is less. So normally whatever is less is your cost, not the fair market value. So whatever I put into it then, whatever I cost segged out, is sort of, you set it aside, and then when I make it a rental, I'll move that over the depreciation schedule. Make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. Yes.
And another weird exception, but you know, you have a place and you rent it short term or medium term, and you start taking your shorter period for depreciation.
Yeah.
And then you move in yourself later.
Right.
Can you keep it shorter, or you have to switch it back?
So the issue is on accelerated. If you go below 50% usage, you should recapture. But generally, that's not. But like in a house, no, actually, in a house you're going to live in, You just, that's your new basis. So there's potentially when you sell it, even after 2 years, you might pay some tax on that. But it doesn't, I don't think you'll have to recapture. I'll double check. If you give me your card, I'll send you the answer. But I don't think you'd have to so normally like a vehicle, if I have a vehicle and I write the whole vehicle off, if I've used accelerated, so actually this, I have to think about that. So if I have a vehicle and I take 100% bonus depreciation the first year I own it, and then it all of a sudden becomes personal, I've got to recapture all that on a vehicle. So actually, I'm thinking you may, I just have to look into that. I hadn't thought about that. I'll have to double check. So yeah, the answer is either you're going to have to recapture it or it's just going to go as a reduction in your basis. And potentially, depending on how long you own it and that kind of thing, even that 121 exclusion might produce some taxable income because you've got the depreciation in there. So. Yeah, you have to recapture. That's why. Yeah. So you'd have to if you are going to move into it, I guess that would be something I'd add to the slide. If you're going to move back into it, then I probably would not do the cost seg. Because if you just do regular straight line, you don't have to recapture it. So, like I said, yes, sir.
Hey, Scott. How's it going?
You're welcome.
So, on a 1031 exchange, if you're going to take some single family houses, maybe some duplexes, maybe like your 5 years after, sell those off and 1031 them into a syndication, obviously you've got some risk there, you've got some advantages there. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, so the problem is you can't 1031 into a syndication. The only one you could go into is what's called a Delaware statutory trust. You can't do it into Lee, if you hear Lee later, he has apartment syndications. You can't put your money in his apartment syndication. That you can't 1031 a real asset into a partnership. Now we have a whole nother session we do on that, but there is a way to set up a partnership. You gotta do it from the beginning, where the partnership really is sort of like a Delaware statutory trust, where you make an election, 761A election, that allows basically you to own a piece of the property. Because that's the problem. Problem in a regular syndication, you don't own a piece of property. You own an investment interest, and you can't 1031 into paper. So a Delaware statutory trust, the way that works is you actually own, if you're 1% of it, you own 1% of the value of the house, 1% of the value of the roof, 1% of the value of, you know, whatever it is, all those assets, you own a percent of those. So a stove was put in, you own $3 of the stove, right? So, and you've actually got to keep track of that separate, because that actually doesn't go as a K-1, it goes on your Schedule E, on your personal return, as a rental. Like I've got a guy did a Delaware statutory trust out of Illinois. So we have to include his income from the properties. He gets his depreciation. It's listed just like he owns it. And that's really the only way to do it. But a 1031, if you do it in a Delaware statutory trust, it's still the same thing. You've got a deferral of whatever that gain is. Does that make sense? Yeah. Anybody else? All right. Thank you very much.